Welcome to episode 87 of GBW Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me as always is Chris.
Oh, me so horny. Oh, me so horny.
Ah, that's hello. Super comforting.
I just thought it went with the topic.
Oh, it does. Well,
a little bit.
Yeah.
What did I get for $5?
Anything you want. What's that?
That's Full Metal Jacket.
Oh.
Yeah. But it's also in Me So Horny by Two Live Crew.
Got it.
Dude, do you remember? I don't know if this would be for you, but do you remember when Two Live Crew, when they first came out, and there's a big controversy about Me So Horny and all that?
Yeah.
And everybody at school was like dubbing it and then passing it around, and you felt like such a badass that you had the Two Live Crew dubbed cassette, and you would listen to it in your bedroom really loud so your parents would get pissed off because they'd be all this crude stuff. It's like, did you ever...
I didn't.
You didn't?
I was a little bit a few years past, and I was a total metalhead, so...
Well, I guess, but it's the same thing, like my girlfriend was like, she's like, remember Ice-T, the album Power?
I gave you that.
Yeah. She's like, I used to play that Let's Get Buck Naked and Fuck. And I would play it really loud just to try and piss my parents off, and it never worked. I think that after a while, the parents are just like, yeah, fuck it. It's what idiots I have. I'm raising idiots.
Yeah, that's so, totally true.
Anyway, that was a bit of a tangent.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
How are we tonight?
Oh, everybody. We're all good.
How are you, Josh?
We're all good.
Wow, do you have multiple personalities?
Oh, my God. I'm so tired right now that I might sound drunk, but I'm not. I'm just, like, delirious.
It's okay. We'll get through this.
I know.
Okay, so.
Okay, so tonight's episode. Actually, the reason I just thought of doing this topic is because you reviewed that fucking Evil Breed
thing.
Evil
Breed, yes.
So we decided to do porn stars in mainstream movies.
When porn goes legit.
Yeah. Or tries to go legit.
Well,
it doesn't always work out.
Usually fails.
Sometimes there's a boomerang effect with the actors. But sometimes, no, there's mostly the boomerang effect
you
with
know,
the actors.
I love those movies like Samhain, where it's like they mostly got porn stars to be in it.
Yeah.
So when you're watching it, you can do that cliched comment like, this movie's got acting on the level of a porno. But
right.
Then you're like, I've seen pornos with better acting than Samhain.
That's true. Yeah.
So,
well, it's interesting because some of the actors that have been in pornos, particularly 70s and 80s, I actually thought could maybe make a crossover, but those aren't the ones that tried.
Yeah.
Like guys like Jerry Butler and Harry Reams, like they were actually pretty good actors, but they were just like, nah, we're just gonna stay in porn. But
which was the guy who did Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls?
John Holmes.
Was it John Holmes?
Well, John Holmes was in that, I know that.
I thought there was someone else in it.
Oh yeah, like I don't know who in that was in that, but it, like, there was all kinds of them. Like Paul Thomas was another one that,
well, that was like,
he was in Jesus Christ Superstar though.
But that was also back in the day when those kind of movies actually made an effort to have a form of some story or something, not like these days where they're just like 2-minute clips on the internet stuff or parodies.
So it's changed a lot, that's for sure. But before we get into that, let's get into what we've watched.
Okay.
So I guess you should go first.
Okay, I'll go first. Let's see what to start with. Surprisingly, Josh, actually, I know how I'm going to start, because I'm going to prove you wrong on something to start with.
Oh, no. Children of the Corn?
Hell yeah.
Oh, God. Are you kidding me?
How did you know?
I didn't know. I'm just like, what could
you
possibly...
I remember a while ago when I watched Children of the Corn, and I told you...
There's no way you're going to prove
me
wrong.
I'm going to watch them all, and you're like, bullshit, you're never going to watch them. Well, guess what?
Oh, I was thinking of a shitty franchise you've been trying to watch. And that's, I guess, the only one, really.
That's really the only one. So I watched Children of the Corn 2.
Oh, my. Only on 2?
Yeah. Children of the Corn 2.
Oh, God.
The Final Sacrifice. What a fucking lie that is, since there's 9 of these things.
Are you really going to go through all of them?
Dude, I'm going to try.
Oh, dude.
It's going to take me a while.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try. I mean, it's been months since I watched the original.
Yeah.
So this is from 1992, 8 years after the original Children of the Corn.
Is this the one with the blue cover?
Yes.
Okay.
this was also The only other movie apart from the first one that was released theatrically.
Okay, yeah.
This actually played in theaters back weird. In 92.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Well, I don't think many did. So this is 8 years after the original. It starts really cool. Like, it's really morbid because it's got these people going down into this cellar with their flashlights, and they just find, like, dead bodies everywhere.
Okay.
So then it comes out that it's, like, it's Gatlin, Nebraska, which is where the first movie took place. It's right after the kids had basically massacred everybody,
right?
Like all the adults and everything. And it's like a direct sequel from the first one where they're like, there was a young couple here, but they escaped and all this stuff. Like, it actually tries to tie into the first one. And what it is it's the remaining kids of Gatlin get sent to a neighboring village. And of course, he who walks behind the rose,
yeah,
is back to basically possess these kids to start murdering again. And in the middle of this is this reporter, this tabloid reporter played by Terrence Knox from Call of Duty. What's that show? That Vietnam show in the 80s. Call...
Tour of Duty?
Tour of Duty.
Yeah, okay.
He was one of the main actors in Tour of Duty.
Okay.
He's our tabloid reporter who's come to town, who's like passing through town with his teenage son. And they get caught up in trying to figure out what happened. And while this is going on, a lot of the townsfolk start getting murdered.
Yeah.
That's a basic story. I kind of dug the setup. Mm-hmm. Like, I always hate it when movies try and fall, like, continue on where the last one left, especially with an 8-year gap like this.
Right.
And I was kind of like, this is okay. I'm kind of enjoying this. I like how they tied it together. And I'm like, I'm thinking Terrence Knox and his teenage son, Dan, played by Paul Shearer. He's like, I'm like,
Paul Shear?
Shearer. C-H-E-R-R-E-R. Not Paul Shear.
Oh.
Not how did this get made guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, you know, they kind of have this good interplay between each other and everything. And then, of course, there's a little bit of suspect optical effects because you got like the corn vision in the trees. You got these really bad looking clouds, ominous storm clouds rolling in, and they're optical digital effects, yeah. And they don't look very good. And, you know, there's this weird scene that has nothing to do with the movie where the guy's going through the cornfields and he ends up like falling through this CG tunnel and breaking into particles and everything. And then he comes out the other side fully formed. And
oh my God, you're totally losing me.
I'm not selling you on that. But listen, the thing is, some of the deaths in this movie are really fun.
Really?
Yeah. Like, there's a death involving a house that's up on stilts that references Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Okay. There's another scene where they take over, they start controlling a lady in a motorized wheelchair with, like, a RC remote, and they fucking fly her through the window of a bingo hall while a guy yells bingo just as she shatters through the window.
That's pretty cool.
There's some pretty rad deaths in this movie, okay?
Yeah.
So it's got that going for it.
Okay.
And I'm like, this is kind of fun. It gets a little bit muddled in the middle because it tries to give the dad and the teenage son love interests.
Like with each other?
No. Like the dad goes...
I'm just kidding, man.
I know you are. The dad gets like hooked up with like the chick who runs the bed and breakfast in town. And then this teenage son gets hooked up with one of the local girls who gives him a little bit of attitude at first.
Right. Okay.
So they like are hooked up and there's scenes of that. And I'm like, this is boring.
Yeah.
Just give me these kids murdering the townsfolk.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that. Gets a little sloppy near the end. Got your typical like, oh, here comes the Native American character to explain what's going on with he who walks behind the rose to give it this mystical angle. Doesn't work.
A lot of those in that time period.
It just doesn't work that way. But like for a movie that came out in the early 90s, which is considered to be like a low point of horror movies, it's watchable.
Okay.
I'm sure it's probably better than, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Oh my God, man.
I mean, I remember liking part 3 okay, too. Urban Harvest. I remember liking that. That's next. But the thing that I thought was interesting about this movie that I didn't realize until I was watching it is that it was co-written by Gilbert Adler and A.L. Katz.
All right, yeah.
Who did a lot of the Tales from the Crypt stuff at that time. They did Bordello of Blood and things like that. So I was like, wow, the guys who did all these Tales from the Crypt episodes I liked did a Children of the Corn movie.
Wow, yeah.
So I didn't know that going in, and it made sense when I was watching it just because it had that kind of sense of humor about it at times.
It was probably like a Castaway Tales from the Crypt script.
Could have
that
been.
They like turned into a Children of the Corn.
Could have been. And I was like, you know, I can understand this Wizard of Oz joke now.
Yeah.
Because of who wrote it. So I'm not going to sell it to you and say, fuck, man, Children of Corn 2 is amazing. But when I went into it and I came out at the end going, that was all right. It was okay. You know, it bodes well for the next one. But, dude, I think when I get to, like, part 7 or part 8 or even part 9 just fucking came out, like, 2 months ago.
Oh, my God.
We're talking 8 and 9 were the, hi, we're Dimension Pictures. We're trying to keep the rights. So we're going to crank out a Children of Corn movie.
Wow.
That's what I'm not looking forward to.
No shit. Police Academy is going to look like The Godfather.
Yeah, but at the moment, I think the first two movies are perfectly entertaining.
Nice. So, yeah. All right. Okay.
What do you got?
The problem is I didn't really like the first one even, so.
I thought the first one was fairly entertaining, yeah. But it's the same thing. It's the same thing with the first one. The midsection just is trying too hard to build a story. When all I signed up for was to see kids murdering adults.
Yeah.
That's all I want. Give me 90 minutes of minimal plot with kids creatively killing adults. I'm happy.
Well, your wish might actually come true in some of the sequels, so.
We'll see. We'll see. I know that part 6, Children of the Corn 666, God. Isaac is back from the first one.
Oh.
And he co-wrote the script.
Oh,
the
actor. Shit.
So we'll see how that works out for me. So wow. don't bait your breath that there's going to be a Children of the Corn movie every episode, but you know, I've now officially broke the shrink wrap on that 6 movie set, so it's going to happen.
Oh my God.
It's going to happen.
All right. Okay. Well, I decided to move forward with the series as well.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well,
what series would that
all
be, Josh?
The goodwill that Last House in the Woods built up for good old Ghost House Underground has been unceremoniously stripped away
by
No Man's Land, The Rise of Wreaker.
Oh, dude, I can see why.
So,
you know what's funny? I haven't seen the original Wreaker. I've seen No Man's Land, and I hated it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So first of all, I think I think that's the only way you would want to see this movie. If you've seen the original Wreaker, this is basically exactly the same thing, except not as well done. Mm-hmm. So that's that. This is directed by Dave Payne, who brought us the original Wreaker. He also worked with Corman back in the 90s on like Alien, Terminator, and Showgirl Murders, and those like Maria Ford specials.
High quality.
Yeah. But they were kind of fun. Anyway, this one opened quite well. It opens with a drifter played by Lou Temple, who's been in a lot of genre stuff. He's like a kind of like a like dust devil like hitchhiker on a like lone road. And anyway, he ends up dying quite violently. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe this will be all right. And the other Wreaker opened similarly with a really violent opening. And so I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, that's how they get you.
Yeah. And then pretty quickly, I realized that Robert Pine is the sheriff who's going to be one of the central characters. And I always like Robert Pine in Chips. He was the TV series. He was the captain.
Oh, okay.
And he's also the dad of Chris Pine, the Captain Kirk guy.
Okay.
But then, you know, he has a partner, a young, you know, it's actually a son who's also his partner. It's weird. But it's, you know, the young... You know,
cocky
son who thinks he could do the job better than his dad, blah, blah. And that guy got tiring really quick. We then meet a waitress at the hotel / you know, truck stopped named Maya, played by Mircea Monroe. She was actually the best part of this movie, so I didn't mind her. She was okay at acting, and she was nice to look at, so that was okay. So this one, it's the same thing. We've got this like kind of serial killer spirit floating around, and people can smell it when they're about to, when it's about to attack. But I just, and then they throw in this whole like angle with these guys robbed a local casino and they end up at the truck stop. And so it's like the cops against the robbers.
It's trying to be a Tarantino monster movie.
Yeah. Against the Wreaker thing. And, yeah, I mean, the main problem I had with this is the fact that I saw the original Reeker, which is not a good movie either, but I kind of knew this whole setup already. I knew the location, I knew the twist, and it was exactly the same thing. So I think, yeah, like I said, I think if you saw this first, might be okay.
No, it was terrible.
But in this situation, it just wasn't very good because I'd already kind of been down this road. Some of the actors were okay. I mean, like I said, Mercia Monroe was good. The guy who played her kind of one of the bank robbers who was also her ex-boyfriend, he was okay. It had Desmond Askew, who was in Go. He was the annoying British guy in Go. He played one of the bank robbers. He was okay, but annoying, as just like he was in Go. It had a few good moments, but yeah, I mean, I thought Last House in the Woods was so good, and it was like a really kind of like the shining light of the series. And the series has been getting sort of better, like aside from Trackman. I have found like it's been, I feel like the quality was getting a bit better, but now this one, I'm just like, why? Like, what an odd choice. Cause all the other ones in the series so far, other than the first one, The Tattooist, have been kind of like foreign imports. Like, they've been buying up foreign movies that look like and bringing them to America under this label. So, you know, even if they kind of sucked, like they were, you know, they were at least kind of unique in a way. But this one was just like a straight up sequel that just wasn't very good. So, thought I'd get this one out of the way quickly.
Am I correct? And I'm trying to think if I remember, but when I saw this, didn't like, because you can smell when the Reeker's coming.
Yeah.
Didn't a lot of people make quips about, did you fart?
Wasn't it the first one? Oh, you haven't seen the first one.
Yeah. I remember them saying, always saying like asking people if they farted.
I don't remember that.
Because like they'd smell it and be like, oh man, dude, that's disgusting and stuff like that.
I don't remember that. I remember a lot of what's that smell, and someone has to go like swimming around in a septic tank. So there was a bit of poop humor there.
I'm pretty sure that I got this from like Netflix when they were still mailing DVDs to your house.
Yeah. What possessed you to get a...
I didn't know it was
not like you to get a sequel.
I just
yeah.
didn't know.
Oh, you just didn't know.
I didn't know at the time. And then when I found out later, I was like, oh, well, this sequel doesn't make me want to watch the original.
Yeah. It's just such a weird movie to make a sequel. Like, the first one isn't like a really a classic by any stretch.
Maybe it did enough money that they were like, let's make a second one.
Yeah, and then to like kind of do the same thing, like I'd at least have brought it to a different location, right? Like to mix it up a bit.
Yeah.
Like it just seemed like, yeah, just kind of pointless, right? So, unfortunately. But I mean, I kind of expected this. So the next up is Dance of the Dead. So
which I really like.
I am looking forward to seeing that one.
You know I like that one.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of the ones in the latter half. They're not a bunch, sorry. Let me correct that. There's a few of the ones in the latter half of the run here, because I think I'm about halfway through now.
Oh, you're only halfway?
Yeah, that looked like they'll be okay.
Seems like you've been talking about these fucking things forever.
No, but there's a few that look,
Like what?
Like, well, I think The Thaw will be okay.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that's supposed to be pretty good.
I think Stag Night might be okay.
I have that one at home, too.
Not looking forward to Psych 9.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
That just doesn't look like something I'm interested in.
Is
and then
Seventh Moon part of that?
Seventh Moon I've
okay.
seen.
Okay.
And I didn't really like it, but I'm going to try it again because that's directed by Eduardo Sanchez.
That's the Amy Smart?
Amy Smart, yeah. Oh, okay. So we'll see. But yeah, I'll be happy when this one's
done.
Give me a
heads up when it's time for Stag Night.
Okay.
Because I have that one sitting at home too, so we can watch it the same
okay.
week.
Yeah, sure.
All right.
That's No Man's Land, The Rise of Reeker.
So since you just got rid of a bad one, I'm going to get rid of my only bad one on my list. Like, one of the other movies I'm going to talk about is kind of like Children of the Corn, where I'm like, I didn't like it, but like love it, but it was watchable. This one, I think, was a waste of time from the get-go. It's a movie from 2013 starring Justin Timberlake and Ben Affleck. It's called Runner Runner.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, this is a who cares kind of story.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was saying the entire time is who cares. Justin Timberlake plays like this Princeton student who like is deep in the world of online gambling. So he's like kind of making his tuition by online gambling, and he gets kind of scammed by this website run by Ben Affleck's character. I don't remember. His last name's Black. I don't remember what his first name is. So he's like, I'm going to go to this guy's conference to tell him he scammed me, basically. They're like, oh, this guy, you're not going to be able to talk to him. He's hard to find or whatever. He just goes to this party with like these notes he made with Blacklight and holds them up to security cameras saying, you scammed me and this is how. And he gets an audience with this Ben Affleck character right away. And then by the end of that night, he's hired to work for Ben Affleck.
Okay.
To build this online gambling empire, which of course pisses off other people. And you got the Cuban, because it's set in like... It's set in Costa Rica, so you've got the Costa Rican gangsters coming after Ben Affleck. You got the FBI trying to get Justin Timberlake to throw his new boss under the bus and all that stuff. And you got me yawning my fucking ass off through the whole thing. It was just, I like crime movies, and I like crime movies that are about gambling in some ways. Like, you know, everyone likes Casino.
Yeah.
People, like, the seedy underbelly of gambling, I find, is really interesting.
Right.
But when it comes to a movie that's main focus is online gambling, I don't give two fucks.
Yeah.
I really don't. And the problem is, you can't cast Ben Affleck as your villain. I'm sorry. It does not work. He's not convincing as a bad guy.
Right.
There's a scene in this movie where he's like, basically feeds a dude to a crocodile.
Really?
While Justin Timberlake watches. And I'm like, that's great if you had someone like fucking Harvey Keitel feeding someone to a crocodile. And I'm in and I'm convinced. Have Christopher Walken in there doing that or something.
Yeah.
Don't fucking give me Ben Affleck because I'm not buying it
for
one
totally.
Second.
Yeah.
I'm totally not buying it. It's the same problem with the movie he made a couple years ago, Live by Night.
Okay.
Where the one he directed, which is based on the Dennis Lehane book. Where he's playing like a Prohibition era gangster.
Right.
He casts himself in the main villain role and it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because he's not a good villain.
Right.
Like even at the best of times, Ben Affleck's not a very good actor.
Yeah.
When he's trying to play a villain, it's worse.
I can imagine.
I mean, I actually thought Justin Timberlake was okay in this movie.
Yeah.
I think Justin Timberlake is a pretty charismatic guy generally. I think he's pretty good when he's been on like Saturday Night Live sketches and stuff like that. I think he's got some personality.
Yeah.
He's not given much to do in this, really. And, you know, when you're going up against Affleck, who's stinking up the place, it's kind of hard. And you've got Gemma Arterton as like...
Oh, I like her.
Ben Affleck's girlfriend who Justin Timberlake decides he wants to try and get with.
That's always a smart move.
You know, just stuff like that. It was just super boring, super uninteresting. And just so much logic gaps to the plot. And, you know, the characters are never developed at all. I knew nothing about these characters by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is not a good sign. And it's unfortunate because, like I said, I like gambling underbelly movies like this. And the guys who wrote this movie wrote the movie Rounders in 1998.
Oh, yeah.
With Matt Damon.
Yeah.
And I really like that movie.
Mm.
And that's a gambling-based kind of movie, too. And that one actually worked. This one's just, it's a flop. It's miserable.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer for this when it was coming out, and it was immediate write-off.
Yeah, it's pretty miserable. I avoid it.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
Well, it's got to say something when a Hollywood movie is the worst movie of the kind of shit that I watch.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. All right. So moving on to better past years, depending on how you look at things.
Okay.
But this was a movie I super dug, and it's
not for everyone.
It's definitely not for everyone. So this is a movie called Malibu High from 1979.
I can see why you'd like this.
Have you seen this?
Long time ago. I have it in one of those sets.
Okay. So directed by Irvin Berwick, who also did a really kind of, well, not, I wouldn't even say classic, but a B movie called Hitchhike to Hell. But this, I got this one. This was on a double feature put out by Scorpion.
Yeah, it's out on Blu-ray
from Vinegar Syndrome now.
I have the Mill Creek Too Cool for School set.
Oh, it's in there too.
Yeah, I think it's on that one too with like My Chauffeur and Tomboy and Weekend Pass and all those. That's a fucking awesome set.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay. So this is marketed like a sex comedy. Yeah, so
it totally is.
So the cover of this has this, you know, this smiling woman or girl, I guess, you know, kicking her feet up. Funnily enough, it's not even the...
I thought she's like on the beach with her like her rear end sticking in the air or something.
Yeah,
on the
she's kind of like laying down on with a bikini.
Yeah.
But the that actress isn't even in the movie. It's one of these.
Bait and switch.
That actress was... played by Mary Margaret Hawes, but she actually isn't in the movie. So the movie opens. We're introduced to the main character named Kim, played by Jill Lansing, and this is a badass chick. So she's like a teenager, and she like sleeps naked and smokes. Drinks and smokes weed and
wow.
And she just got dumped by her boyfriend, so she's pissed off.
What a rebel!
She like lips off her mom. Like yeah, she's a total like. Badass kid, but like a badass girl out of a John Waters movie type badass. Okay. So she meets up with her friend Lucy, who's like a really boring friend. So because I was like, oh fuck, I hope I don't have to watch these two together through the whole movie, because we've got Kim, who you immediately are kind of drawn to because she's like all hardcore. And then you're this boring Lucy who's just kind of there. Like, so no, and she's not in the movie throughout. You know, and then...
Just kind of the character is like, wah, wah, wah.
And it's funny you just did that because it's got these quirky things that happen, like, start happening. Like, that kind of sound happens, like, when, like, Kim will, like, lip off her mom. She'll be like, fuck you, mom. And then you'll hear this... Burr, burr. Yeah, it's like this... It's like super, like it's like a video game sound, and it's super strange.
It's probably not as strange as when they did it in Last House on the Left, though.
Right? Yeah. So anyway, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of into this. Then we get introduced to this like this like guy who's like the local drug dealer. So he's a little older. He's like probably in his 20s. Tony the Pimp, I'm calling him.
Does he have a cool stash?
He's got a. I think he did have a cool stash,
nice.
And he's got a cool like shag van, with like you know it's all pimped out.
You remember all those fucking shag van movies and in the '70s?
It's got the shag carpet in the back, and he's played by Alex Mann, and he's been in a few things. If you're a fan of Something Weird Video, you'll know him from movies like Doris Wishman's Keyholes Are for Peeping, and he was also in like I Drink Your Blood. So he shows up, and he's this like sleazy drug dealer guy, but he's also a pimp. He's also the local pimp, and he pimps out girls who like do their johns in the back of his shag van. So I'm like, okay, I'm into this. I'm really liking the lead character. We've got this like sleazy pimp guy.
Josh is like, prostitutes, I'm in.
We've got these weird sounds going on. Okay, so then Jill goes to...
I wish there was a scene where he's like, the chick does... He's going to get the money from the chick. He's like, where's my money? And then he like slaps her and it goes... Burr, burr,
burr. It might happen.
Okay.
So then... Jill or Kim is over at her friend's house, the boring friend, and they're like smoking weed and stuff. And Kim's like, I'm not, there's no more of this shit for me. Things are going to change for me tomorrow. I'm not going to be like getting shitty marks. I'm going to graduate from high school with the top marks.
What?
And I'm going to totally change. Things are changing tomorrow. And her friend's like, whatever. So what does Kim do? She like, just gets up, goes to school the next day wearing this like mini skirt, which like I guess was supposed to be super slutty, but it doesn't really look like it. And this like, you know, tight top, and she's like, ah, and you know, it's played out like, oh, she's owning the school, like haha, she's not on top of things.
Yeah.
So she goes to class and she's like, yeah, I'm fucking failing everything, meh, meh. So what does she decide to do?
Study.
Fuck her teacher.
Oh yeah.
So what she does is she starts basically going up to all her teachers of the classes she's failing, and I can't remember where she says, but she's like, teacher, you know, I you know, kind of, it's kind of like, I know you want me, and they're like, no, I don't want you. And he's like, then she's like, Kim's like, yeah, well, I think you do. And, you know, I'm going to be up at the point or whatever it was called at 3 o'clock. So I'll see you there. Right. And the teacher's like, I'm not going to see you there. Sure enough, we're at the point.
And the teacher shows up.
She fucks him, starts getting A's.
A plus.
So she's fucking teachers. Then she decides she's going to.
Where's the pimp while she's fucking all the teachers?
She goes to the pimp. She's like, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to make things better. So I'm going to start being a prostitute.
That makes things better.
So she,
if nope, Angel has taught us anything, it makes everything better.
It does, because she starts making money. So she can now, like, she has a fancy car. She's got cool clothes. And she's also, like, able to, like, start to try and make her ex-loser boyfriend jealous, who's now with a new girl named Annette, who's kind of like Kim's nemesis. And Annette, she's played by Tammy Taylor, who was in Don't Go Near the Park and Meatballs 2. So you might recognize her. Anyway, so the lame boyfriend's there. Annette's getting jealous. The boyfriend, Kevin's getting jealous. But then Kim starts hooking up with this older guy. I didn't write down his name. I wish I remembered, because it was a stupid name. Played by Garth Pillsbury from Russ Meyer's Vixen. And this guy's like kind of like a crime dude. And so she's like starting to get together with him. I think she fucks him. I think that's how they get together, because he's maybe I think
par for the course. Remember
that
part.
Anyway, this turns out that he's got a way where she can, you know, get even more money. Because he actually is a contract dude and offers her a job so she could become a hit woman. So she's now a prostitute, hit woman, teacher fucking high school student. So
this is like the movie that Angel should have aspired
really
to be.
It really starts going bananas. So yeah, then just, so then she starts doing hits. And
what the fuck?
And yeah, it just goes into really weird places. It's full of nudity from Kim. It's full of like all these like murders, all this like really real debauchery going on, but it's not like porno.
Yeah, it's still going.
The burr is going on, and it's got a lot of funny dialogue. This girl is awesome. This Jill Lansing, the only movie she's ever been in. I don't know why. It's bizarre, cuz she was super charismatic. I totally loved her. And yeah, it's got like a, you know, big finale chase scene, and actually during that scene, the theme court from People's Court's playing for some reason. But the whole waka 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 part after that part,
the bongos and everything.
Yeah. It's really good. So anyway, I'd really recommend this one. It's not a sex comedy at all. It's more of like a kind of a trashy drama, but yeah, if you're into like high school movies and kind of low budget 70s, this is a really good one, and I didn't think it would be, but it ended up being really good.
I have to crank out my.
It's worth a watch.
I have to crank out my Mill Creek set if she becomes a hit woman.
It's I'm like seriously, teacher fucker, now a prostitute, and now she's a hit woman. So and she's
I'm
like,
gonna change my life.
And there was some line.
Gonna happen.
Some line in it. And she's like, well, I'm a prostitute. I'm not going to be a hit woman. But she does, and yeah, it's pretty funny. So
awesome. Okay.
Check it out. Malibu High.
Okay, well, let's keep the 70s comedies going, but mine's a little bit more non-exploitation. So when I was a kid, I grew up in an English household, like a British household. So we were huge into Monty Python. Like, you know, Holy Grail, Life of Brian, all that stuff. And, you know, I'd always kind of known about them after they left. Like, I knew Terry Gilliam was making movies now. Like, he was making Time Bandits and stuff. I knew John Cleese was in, like, Fawlty Towers and Fish Called Wanda, so on and so forth. And then, you know, Eric Idle would pop up once in a while in something. And I'd be like, oh, he's the weird-looking one or whatever.
Yeah.
But I've always heard that he did a mockumentary called The Rudels.
Yeah.
All you need is cash.
Yeah.
And it was on one of the movie channels recently, so I was like, I'm going to give this a go. So this is from 1978. It aired on NBC originally. Lauren Michaels from Saturday Night Live was one of the producers, and it flopped miserably, apparently, when it was on TV. It had like the lowest ratings of its time slot. And it's really all it is it's Eric Idle. He co-wrote it or co-directed it. Sorry. He wrote it and he co-stars. And it's basically a takeoff of the Beatles with this band called the Ruddles.
Yeah.
Who are like, you know, not that great, but all the ladies love them. And the thing is that this sticks so closely to the history of the real Beatles that the humor kind of becomes non-existent after a while.
Right, yeah.
Like, you're watching it, you're like, oh, I'm kind of, this is kind of witty, the way they're, like, doing a takeoff on Yellow Submarine here and how they're reorganizing these songs to sound like the Beatles songs but have, like, funnier lyrics. And, you know, oh, it's this phrase, it's this time frame of the Beatles' lifespan when they're in the cavern doing all the shows and so on and yeah. so forth. And it's got all that stuff, but it just... And at the beginning, some of that stuff is kind of funny.
Yeah.
But it just hews way too closely to the history of the actual Beatles.
Right.
That after a while, you're like, okay, the jokes aren't working as well because you're not blazing your own kind of alternate history yeah. to the true Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're sticking way too closely
right.
to it. And, you know, it works to a point. Like, I thought this was entertaining. And it does work to a point, but it's not like a movie where, like, this is Spinal Tap.
No.
Where it's doing its own thing, and it's playing on the expected rock and roll lifestyle and how these bands acted and everything, but blazing its own path.
Yeah.
That's my main issue with this one, is that it doesn't blaze its own path at all.
Yeah.
Because it just sticks way closely to the history of the original band. I found it to be okay. Like, I was entertained. It was only, like, 76 minutes long. I had a fun time picking out all the cameos in this because, you know, you got Dan Aykroyd shows up. All the Saturday Night Live people show up, basically. Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, Belushi. Mm. They all show up in little parts in this movie, and there's other people who show up, and you're just like, oh, it's that guy. Yeah. Oh, now it's that guy, you know? You kind of enjoy picking out the faces. And Eric Idle is pretty good as the main Ruddle guy and the interviewer who's, you know, staging the documentary. He's kind of good. But the thing about him is he was never really one of my favorites of the Monty Python gang.
Yeah.
Because he just seemed to be doing the same kind of jokes all the time.
Right.
Which is kind of what he's doing here.
Right.
So I'm not saying that it wasn't fun in some ways. And if you know the Beatles and you know the history of the Beatles, it's kind of amusing at first to see how they're kind of paralleling it, but like I said, it doesn't, it needs to blaze its own path more than it did. And maybe there's a 2004 sequel that came out, maybe that one does a better job. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know, but I've heard it's just mostly repurposing the footage from this one.
Yeah, I didn't like this one at all.
Yeah, I thought it was okay, but yeah. Like I said, it needs to do its own thing, and it doesn't do enough of its own thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Ruddles, all you need is cash. I know it has a cult following, so that's also why I watched
it. Oh, does it really?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
It's actually, I remember this is one of the first VHS I got rid of.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's like a, there's actually a Blu-ray release of this.
Yeah.
And it's actually, when I was looking into it afterwards, I'm like, wow, this movie's got a more of a cult following than I realized.
Huh.
So.
Wow.
If you're into those kind of things, you could do worse, but...
Yeah.
If you really want to watch a mockumentary rock movie, watch Spinal Tap every
yeah.
time.
Yeah, for
every
sure.
Every time.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's bring it down a little bit.
Bring it down like Barry White, baby.
But I'm sticking in the 70s, of course.
Okay.
And I decided to watch Hickey and Boggs from 1972.
I have this sitting at home. I'm looking forward to watching this one.
Yeah, okay. So directed by Robert Culp.
Yep.
Who... I really knew of from The Greatest American Hero.
Yeah.
But he's he's been in tons of stuff.
Wasn't he in... was he Man from U.N.C.L.E.? Is that Robert?
No, Cole? That's Robert Vaughn.
Oh, yeah. Robert Vaughn, okay.
He was in I Spy, though.
Oh, I Spy, that's what it is.
With Bill Cosby.
Yeah, 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 that's what it is, I Spy.
So that's the first odd thing about this movie, is that this is a movie starring Bill Cosby and Robert Culp, who both starred in I Spy, which yeah. was kind of a... It was an action TV series.
Spoofy kind of.
Yeah, but it wasn't super serious.
Yeah.
And then you've got this.
Yeah.
And this movie is a fucking downer because these guys are just losers.
Right.
So they're private eyes in, I think it's L.A., And I'm pretty sure it's in Hollywood. Yeah, it is in Hollywood. And they're just these like, yeah, like they're private eyes that just
suck.
They're broke.
Oh, okay.
They're like depressed. Super weird for me to see, especially Bill Cosby. Now we all know what's become of Bill Cosby, but you kind of back then.
Well, in the 70s, he was really at his peak at Cosby Show, but in the 70s, even he was like a cult comedian too.
Comedian, yeah, yeah.
And like I remember, I loved his comedy albums in the 70s. Like,
but he is serious as a heart attack in this movie.
Really?
Like
that seems weird. For
doesn't
him.
Talk much. He's just super quiet.
What year is this?
Bummed out. 1972.
Okay.
So this is the script was written by Walter Hill.
Yep.
It's the first script Walter Hill made. And it's just this is one of those movies that it just starts. There's no backstory. You're just kind of thrown into this situation. And you don't really know what's going on. So what it is you've got Bill Cosby and Robert Culp as these private eyes that are trying to find a missing woman who's involved in like a bank robbery. And the movie is just about them trying to track this missing person down and kind of unveiling this more of a kind of criminal thing going on. And, they end up starting to get the police are pissed off at them because they're private eyes. Then eventually they start pissing off the bad guys, and it's just them trying to figure out what's going on while also trying to, survive from all the shit that's happening and also just living their shitty lives. Like their lives are so shitty. Like, Bill Cosby's like he's broken up with his wife and they've got a daughter and he's like trying to go over and like make it better, but she just won't have it. Culp's like fucking hookers and his like ex-wife's a stripper, and like he'll get, at one point he gets drunk and like goes and just drinks and watches his ex-wife stripping, and it's just like super depressing. So it's just a real kind of dark, downbeat, but probably somewhat realistic look at what it's like to be a private eye in the 70s. But it wasn't what I was expecting, especially with Bill Cosby. I was expecting it to be a little bit more of a fun romp.
Yep.
But no, this is dark as they come. But I loved it. there's some pretty cool there's a couple of decent action sequences. There's a big set piece at Los Angeles Stadium, as well as a big set piece on the beach. Bill Hickman shows up. Now, when this guy shows up in a movie, I'm always excited because he's the guy that did all. He starred in. He's been an actor and stuntman in a bunch of movies. Most well known for being the stunt driver in French Connection, Seven Ups, Bullet. So he's the guy that did all the car stunts. So I'm like, oh fuck, Bill Hickman's in this, there's gonna be an awesome car chase. No, not doesn't happen, but there's still some pretty cool stunt sequences. Tons of great actors in this. We've got a really early performance from James Woods. We've got Michael Moriarty with hair. We've got Rosalind Cash playing from The Omega Man and New Centurions, playing Cosby's ex.
She's also in Children of the Corn too.
Is she? Yes. Rosalind Cash is in that?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Just thought I'd throw that out there.
But, yeah, it's just Ed Lauder's in this. I can't remember the actor's name, but the guy who plays Mr. McGee on the Hulk TV series is in it. And I've never seen that guy in anything other than the Hulk, so it was kind of weird seeing him because he's playing a cop in this, and I kept expecting him to, like, be looking for the green guy. But, yeah, this is a solid movie. Well-deserved of the reputation it's getting. I think it was kind of critically, maligned at the time when it came out, and it is a little bit hard to follow and a little bit slow, but I like movies like this. I mean, this is my favorite genre, so pretty much anything like this, particularly from the 70s, I'm gonna love almost without fail. And this was really, really good, so I'd really highly recommend it. I think you probably like it, but
Walter Hill,
you gotta be in the right mood for this. Yeah. One.
That's weird because I really, like you said, I'm looking at the Blu-ray box and it's just them standing in front of a car holding their guns out.
Yeah.
And I see the name Walter Hill and I'm thinking it's going to be like more of a fun action
not
romp.
Not fun.
and you're making it sound like it's like a super depresso. And that's funny because like Bill Cosby, his 70s stuff, I'm really only familiar with Mother Jugs and Speed.
Right.
And that's okay. Totally not a downer serious movie. That's him and Harvey Keitel and Raquel Welch driving fucking ambulances around town and getting into mischief.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I've always had this movie on my radar, and I did buy it at the last Kino sale, so.
Yeah. If you like those like neo-noirs of the 70s and cop movies, yeah, you'll
like it. I like those kind of things, yeah, so yeah. Probably dig it.
Yeah, it's cool. So Hickey and Boggs.
All right. Well, I'm going to go from that to a movie that's not a downer. It's not great, but I'm surprised it wasn't a downer because when I first put it on, I was like, what am I doing to myself? And that's a movie from 1996 called Big Bully, starring Rick Moranis and Tom Arnold.
Oh, my God.
Now, let me give you reasoning as to why I watched this.
Because it was a dollar.
No, that's part that it was a dollar, but that's not the reason. First of all, this movie was written by Mark Steven Johnson, who had just come off success with the Grumpy Old Men movie.
Oh.
And and it was directed by Steve Miner.
Oh.
Now, Steve Miner, genre fans will know Steve Miner, because this is the guy who directed Friday the 13th Part 2, Friday the 13th Part 3, and Warlock.
And Lake Placid and the Day of the Dead remake.
But he's making Big Bully. Now, I think the reason he's making Big Bully is because he had made Forever Young with Mel Gibson 2 to 3 years prior to this.
Okay.
And that was like kind of a romantic comedy, kind of crowd pleaser movie. So they're like, let's give Steve Miner this movie with Tom Arnold. He's going to be a big star. Not going to be a big fucking star. Sorry. Just because he was kind of funny in True Lies as Arnold's sidekick doesn't mean he's going to be able to carry a movie.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, dude, I really do like Rick Moranis. I really do.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he plays like this guy who's bullied as a kid, and he becomes a successful writer and goes away, and he ends up getting a job back at his old elementary school as a teacher. And, of course, the guy who bullied him, who got sent away for stealing a moon rock, which Rick Moranis' character told on him to do, played by Tom Arnold, is now a teacher in the school who's the shop teacher. And at first, they don't realize who each one is. But when they do, Tom Arnold decides he's going to become a bully again to Rick Moranis' character. Now, this is the problem. The movie starts out really lighthearted and fun. It really does. It's got flashbacks to him being a kid, narration, all the kind of stuff you want to see in these kind of movies. And it's okay. It's fairly engaging. Rick Moranis, interplay with his teenage son, you know, coming to the school and acting like the hot shit writer when he's not really, kind of fun.
Yeah.
Then Tom Arnold's character figures out who he is, and it just becomes a big clusterfuck of mean-spiritedness, slapstick, and just becomes a mess in the last half hour. Because I was like, seriously, in the first hour of this, I shit you not, I was like, this is okay.
Oh, okay.
This is okay. I like Rick Moranis. He's bringing it. Because I've always liked Rick Moranis. Like, you know, Ghostbusters, Strange Brew,
yeah,
Little Shop of Horrors, Spaceballs. He's always kind of been like that nerdy guy who's really like engaging,
yeah,
that you kind of like. And he ended up quitting acting in like 1997.
Yeah.
Because he became widowed and he had to raise his kids. And I totally respect him stepping away from the business.
Yeah.
And he said, even in recent interviews, I have no desire to ever go back.
Huh.
And I respect that in him because like he was had a pretty good career going for himself.
Yeah.
And then he's like, the year after he made Big Bully, it made him quit acting. He's like, fuck this. No, yeah. but you know what I mean? Like, he's fun in this. And Tom Arnold isn't irritating in this until he becomes a bully again.
Yeah.
And it is what it is.
Yeah.
You're not going to watch this movie unless you're a fucking masochist like me. But it's not as bad as you might think.
Right.
Like, it's those mid-90s comedies where I'm always like, I'm always have that trepidation when I go to watch them.
I'm like, this is not going to be very good.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this and I'm like, this is okay. This is okay.
All right.
So it's kind of like Children of the Corn 2 where I'm like, this is okay. Hey, right. It's better than being like, hey, that was shit. Yeah. Oh, wow, that was shit.
That's true. There's okay, only, is yeah. Okay is better than shit.
Exactly. So yeah. That's Big Bully.
All right.
Do with it as you will. Which, in most of our listeners' case, will be avoid it.
All right. Oh, I got one you should not avoid.
Okay.
So I'm a big fan of disaster movies, as you know.
Yes, you are.
And I'm like, okay, I got to watch something more contemporary. I'm fucking stuck in the 70s like an old man here. So I decided to watch The Wave, which is a 2015 Norwegian disaster movie. You're like, what is this?
Don't know it. I know The Impossible, but okay. I don't know The Wave.
So this is a movie. Okay, so I didn't realize this going in, but I found out after. It's directed by Rora Uthog, who is directed Cold Prey, which okay. is a pretty decent slasher movie from Norway. And he's also the director of the new Tomb Raider movie, which I actually wasn't that interested in, but I am now. So this is a movie about a geologist named Christian, played by Christopher Joner. He had a small part in The Revenant, but he's living in this small town in Norway. And the opening of the movie like talks about how there's all these mountains in Norway that are like the rocks are kind of breaking and it's like, you know, there's a high risk, and it's actually all true, where these rocks can break off the side of the mountain and go into the water down below and create a tsunami. So the movie opens with this guy, like, he's got a new job in like a bigger city. So he's about to leave his small town, where he's working as a geologist. So it's just, the opening is about him and his family, like sort of packing things up to get out of town. But of course, as he's on his last day, he starts to realize that there's these readings coming from the local mountain that look like something's amiss. Like there's something's going on with the earth there, and it looks like maybe something bad's going to happen. But of course, no one believes him, so he starts getting ready to go. And then, of course, at the last minute, it's like he sees something and he's like, oh shit, this is happening. So he goes back and tries to warn everyone, and no one believes him. But of course, shit is going to go down. So, and it does. And then it turns into a full-on disaster movie where he's trying to like save his kids, and like the wave is going to come and ruin the town, and it's fucking awesome. And I haven't seen a really good disaster movie like this in a really long time. I mean, I like movies like San Andreas and all the, like, what's his name, the guy who does all the disaster movies.
Emmerich?
Yeah, Roland Emmerich movies. Like, I like shit like that.
Like 2012 and like Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, I love shit like this.
I actually don't mind Day After Tomorrow.
But I'm more of a fan of like older school disaster movies that focus on, you know, a little bit more on character and stuff and not so much on the effects.
Well, like Towering Inferno and stuff.
Yeah. And this one I thought was super, super solid, and loved it. Loved it a lot. So, it goes through all, like, you know, I mean, the main focus is on the family, but like the wife works at a hotel. So we get to meet, you know, some of the, you know, people that work there and stuff. And we've got, you know, Christian's, you know, old geologist friend crew. So we do get some of the stuff where there's a few parallel storylines going on. But yeah, it's a solid action movie set in a disaster zone. And yeah, really, really, really good. I caught it on Netflix. It's coming off imminently, but I would highly recommend checking this one out. I think there's a sequel coming out as well.
Oh, really?
Which is really cool. But great, all the lead characters are really engaging and really well directed. Effects are pretty good, and it's a lot of fun. So yeah, check it out, The Wave.
Yeah, I like the 70s disaster movies too, you know. I like Poseidon Adventure and Towering Inferno and all that, and you're right, they did have a little bit more characters. But I feel like sometimes the 70s ones had a little bit too much for characters, because all those movies ended up being like 2.5 hours long because of that.
They were all a little long.
Yeah,
I consider the Poseidon Adventure the like best.
I think I agree with you
because it had the best characters and there was not too many.
Yeah,
but they were all really well acted and really distinct.
Yeah,
so like that's kind of like my baseline for disaster movies because I don't really go back to The Towering Inferno or The Swarm or I mean I do go back to Earthquake. Earthquake's another really good example.
Well, what about genre. Like do you remember there was like the big phase in the late 90s of all those disaster movies?
Dante's Peak, Volcano,
yeah. And Daylight, and
yeah.
All those. I actually bought Daylight because I'm like, I don't remember Daylight. I just know it's Stallone trapped in a tunnel with a bunch of people. I'm like, I'm in.
Daylight was okay, but the difference is the ones that were in the 70s, I can still watch like repeatedly. Whereas a lot of those ones were what you call like a one and done.
Yeah.
Or like maybe I'd watch it, revisit it again, but it's not one of the one I'd be like wanting to show other people. It's kind of fun while it's on. If it's on Netflix, I'll watch it, but I don't know if I'd run out and buy the Blu-ray.
I wonder if that movie, The Impossible, is a disaster movie though. The one with Ewan McGregor and
Naomi Watts. Because
it's about a tsunami too.
It's about the tsunami in, but I'm just wondering if it's supposed to be
kind of like a disaster movie.
I think it's more of a drama.
Because it's directed by the guy who made The Orphanage.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've kind of wondered about the way it was marketed felt more like a drama than a disaster. It
probably is. I've heard it's good, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
But there does seem to be a little bit of a new wave, of disaster movies.
Like Geostorm?
No, I'm not talking about Geostorm.
What about Hurricane Heist?
I'm definitely intrigued by Hurricane Heist. But no, a better disaster movies.
You know they're making a San Andreas 2, Josh.
I do know that, and I'm excited. But I mean, there's been a couple of Korean like Towering Inferno Tunnel. Type movies. There's Tunnel also from Korea. So there has been, and there's this one, and there's Earthquake movie that looks like it's following up this one. So there is this bit of like a weird like resurgence of the disaster movie in foreign cinema, which I find pretty exciting because they're all being pretty well rated, and it sounds like they're all pretty good. America's a different story, but America's just kind of embracing the silliness of it all.
Right.
But this felt like a serious movie, and it was fun. Yeah, cool. The Wave.
All right. Well, my last selection is also the movie I enjoyed the most out of all of the ones I watched this time, and it was also a revisit. And the thing about this movie is that when it first came out, I was probably 12, and I didn't like it. Then I watched it recently for the first time since I was 12, and I thought this movie was a friggin' riot. It's called Throw Mama from the Train from 1987. Dude, I gotta tell you. Billy Crystal, Danny DeVito, totally inspired by Hitchcock's 1951 movie Strangers on a Train.
Okay.
And it's quite obvious because there's a scene in this movie where Danny DeVito's character is watching the movie in a movie theater, munching popcorn, and gets the idea for the plot in this movie.
He's watching Strangers on a Train.
Yeah, okay. So it's an obvious homage to Strangers on a Train. So basically what this is Billy Crystal's like an author who his ex-wife stole his book and took it for her own. So he's stuck with writer's block and he's stuck teaching creative writing in some shitty little community college kind of deal. Danny DeVito is one of the students who isn't a very good writer, but really wants to be, and lives with his mother, who's like overbearing and rude and obnoxious, played by Anne Ramsey, who most of us people our age will know as the Where's the Beef lady from the Wendy's commercials, and also for getting her head blown up with a basketball in Deadly Friend.
Was she the Where's the Beef? Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Hmm.
And also...
I don't know about that one.
I could be wrong. And also The Goonies.
Yeah, I mean... like you said, the Deadly Friend basketball head thing.
Well, exactly, right?
Absolutely what you remember.
Well, exactly, right? And she was actually nominated for an Oscar for this movie.
Yeah.
For Best Supporting Actress. But, so what it is Danny DeVito's a student in Billy Crystal's class, and he's a little bit abrasive. Like, Billy Crystal's like, oh, fuck, stay away from me, kind of. But Danny DeVito's like, I saw Strangers on a Train. I got an idea. You're angry at your ex-wife for stealing your book? I want to be rid of my mom. How about I kill your ex-wife, you'll kill my mom.
Okay.
And that's the basis of the movie.
Yeah.
And it just becomes like a big fucking shit show because things happen that set off other parts of the plot and, you know, it becomes pretty ridiculous by the end. Like, the train of the title does come into play by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that this is a movie I didn't really care for when I was a kid. But now, being a cinemaphile a lot more and having this respect for Hitchcock I have, and, like, I thought it was fun. I thought it was a great way to, like, take that movie and spin it into, like, a kind of a darker, slapstickier kind of comedy.
Right.
And the thing is that I really like Billy Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like 80s Billy Crystal. Because this is the movie made right after Running Scared. And you know I fucking love Running Scared.
Yeah.
You know, and after this, he followed it up with When Harry Met Sally, which I still consider to be one of the best relationship comedies ever made.
Okay.
And then he also did City Slickers, and everybody loves City Slickers.
I haven't seen any of
them. Most people do. But, you know, I really like Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Danny DeVito is having this resurgence now because of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and things like that. But I always kind of liked Danny DeVito just because he was so fucking weird.
Yeah.
You know, he was like the sidekick in the Romancing the Stone and Jewel of the Nile movies. And he was in Taxi. And he was just like this abrupt kind of obnoxious short dude, basically.
Yeah.
And this movie he actually directed as well.
Oh, wow.
So the thing is about him is that he's directed a lot of movies, but every fucking movie this guy directs is dark. Like dark comedy. Throw Mama from the Train is a lot darker than you think it's going to be when you're watching it.
Right.
Like there's some seriously morbid shit in this movie. Huh. And you're like, "Wow, that's coming out of nowhere."
Yeah.
And he also directed Duplex, which is really dark. He directed War of the Roses with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner, which is really dark.
Yeah.
He directed Death to Smoochie. Like, pretty much everything this guy has directed outside of acting has been super dark.
Right.
And I'm just like really fucking fascinated with that because I'm like, how is he as a person? Is this like reflecting his actual real personality?
Right.
Does he have this like really like dark morbid streak in him? And
yeah,
this is how he's getting it out of his system, is making movies like this.
Wow.
So I'm just like totally fascinated by that. But I really thought this movie was a lot of fun. I thought there's a lot of witty dialogue in it. I thought Anne Ramsey was fucking great.
Because she's just so... I think she was the turnoff for me on this one.
She's just so abrasive.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's not in it that much. So even if you can't really handle her, she's only in it in small doses.
Right.
It's mostly about the interplay between Billy Crystal and Danny DeVito.
Right.
And they're good together. Like, right. I think Billy Crystal actually brings out a lot of the good in his co-stars, because Gregory Hines also in Running Scared, he had that great relationship with.
Yeah.
When you're watching that movie. I think he was really good at playing off of his co-stars, but I really dug this dude. Like, I didn't know what to expect going in, because like I said, I didn't like it when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. I was like, wow, this is darker than I thought it was going to be. It's totally a homage to Strangers on a Train, and I'm really, really enjoying the main actors in this. So yeah, I really liked it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I recommend Throw Mom from a Train for sure.
Cool.
So yeah.
Sweet.
Josh's VHS Adventures.
Yep. It's that time again.
Hopefully it's better than Shannon Tweed this time.
Shannon Tweed and Dead Sexy. Dead Not So Sexy. Yes. Well, this was a pleasant surprise.
Okay.
Didn't know what to expect from this.
Okay.
So I decided to go with Pumping Iron 2, The Women.
Oh. I'm glad I was waiting, because I was like, okay, he's pausing for a reason.
So
that's never come out on DVD.
It has come out on DVD.
Oh, it has now?
Okay. Yeah. But it's out of print.
All right.
So hard to get. So this is from 1985.
So almost 10 years after the original.
Yeah, directed by George Butler, who also did the original. So I've also actually seen the original fairly recently as well. And I didn't know what I thought of the original. I was expecting a lot more. And I thought it was a bit lame, actually. I thought Arnold's character, or Arnold Schwarzenegger in it was really unlikable. And, right. And then I thought Lou Ferrigno, who is also like it was the two of them in a bodybuilding competition, I thought Ferrigno was kind of a wimp. Like, I felt kind of bad for him. And it didn't really capture me the way I thought it would as a documentary. But this one did.
Really?
So this is about women bodybuilders. So it opened weird because it opens up with, like, helicopter shots over Hoover Dam in a montage with between helicopter shots of the Hoover Dam and the desert and Vegas mixed with a montage of women in tanning beds. And it, like, there was no, like, reason to, like, mix those two images together while this 80s, like, synth song called Future Sex is playing. So I was like, oh, fuck, I don't know what where this is going, what to expect here.
Can you please sing me a line from Future Sex?
I can't.
Oh.
No, I can't. I can't sing you a line from Future Sex.
Why?
Because I just don't remember it. Uh-huh. You know, it was just like,
was it
Future Sex? You know, that kind of thing.
Was it like early Berlin?
No, it wasn't groovy. It was like Footloose.
It wasn't like music.
Sex, I'm a man, I'm no, a child. No, that's an awesome song.
I know it is. So that's
Early Berlin was so good, man.
I know. Much better than all the Top Gun people knew
about.
No,
I know. And when I say Future Sex, it sounds like it's going to be Future Sex.
I know.
But no, it's not like
that. It sounds like it's someone whispering.
It's like, you know, Future Sex. Like,
is it like Kraftwerk?
More like the robot sound.
I've got a pocket calculator, Future Sex.
Not quite. Anyway, so we've got this weird opening with the Hoover Dam mixed with the tanning beds and the Future Sex song.
Future Sex.
Then we start meeting our characters or our competitors in the World Women's Bodybuilding Championship. So we, first of all, we get introduced to Rachel McLish, and she's like the champion. So she's like the Arnold.
Okay. How do I know that name?
Why do you know Rachel McLish? Well,
was she in like Albert Pune movies?
She was in Ravenhawk.
Yep, that's an Albert Pune
and
movie.
And Iron Eagle 3.
Oh, that's how you know. Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, she did go on to a very short acting.
Aces Iron Eagle 3. Acting, get it fucking right, dude.
A short acting career after this. So she's like the big name, the Arnold type character.
When she was like, she's Spanish?
Yeah, she looked like,
yeah.
Not super Spanish, but like, she's obviously got some Latino in her.
Okay. Now I know what she looks like. She had black curly hair. I know who she is now. Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Then we're introduced to this other one, Lori Bower. She's a Texan. You know, she's, you know, working out in her gym in Texas, getting excited for the big competition. And, you know, I was pretty entertained by her pretty quickly because I liked her. She was very likable. And, you know, like in the gym, like, you know, her boyfriend's there and he's wearing like one of those half shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he's got the big beard and he also had, I wrote down, tight Wang shorts because he's wearing these super tight shirts and you can see his unit. you know, like, and it's showing her.
You're like, you're mighty, smighty, tidy, whitey, and you're smuggling plums.
And he's got the big beard. So it actually kind of works in with our porn theme because he kind of looked like an Future 80s sex. Porn star. Looked like a Steve Drake or something. Nice. But anyway, I know way too much about that. So
you know way too much about that dude's package, yes.
Well, it was pretty fucking in your face, man. Like, okay. Kind of hard to miss.
All right.
So we're introduced to the Texan. We're introduced to Rachel. And Rachel's boyfriend's like kind of a knob too.
Who is on the cover of this? Isn't there a blonde girl with like spiky hair flexing?
I think that's the Texan.
That's the Texan. Okay.
Or it's Rachel.
No, it's not Rachel because it's blonde.
Okay,
hair.
I think it's the Texan.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, then
I remember the box.
Then there's also a black girl named Carla. Liked her a lot. Carla Dunlop. She's from New Jersey, and it's showing her with her family. So it's showing them all, like, you know, at home before they're going to the competition. Then we meet this other one named Bev Francis, and this is where the movie starts getting really interesting because she's this Aussie, but she's like a fucking beast. Like, she is, like, she's clearly the best of them all. Like, she's clearly like the one to beat,
right?
Clearly has the best like strength going on. Like, so from a bodybuilding perspective, no question, this is the one. Thing is, she looks really masculine. So then the movie goes into this whole thing where they all go to the competition in Vegas, and then it becomes this whole thing where the judges and everyone's like confused because they're like, what do we do with this? Are we, you know, should we, what's best for the sport? Like, should we be like, should she be winning because she's clearly, you know, the strongest and has done the most work and has the best, you know, muscles and all that? Or is that going to fuck up the sport by changing everything and not having these other women who are also pretty, you know, strong and look good, but they also, you know,
are feminine. Yeah.
So it becomes this really kind of political kind of message movie, which I thought was really interesting for the time period. And actually, I actually thought it was really quite engaging. Like, I was actually going through the movie. Like, I wonder what's going to happen. Like, is she going to win, or are they going to cave and just go give it to the hot girl? So pretty cool. And I was totally into this the whole time. I'm not going to reveal what happened either.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
It had some weird stuff too. Like, because, you know, part of me is like, oh, this is a really strong feminist message. And then it would cut into, like, another montage with, like, the Art of Noise playing. You know, that sexy Art of... There's a sexy Art of Noise song. I can't remember what it's called. But, and it's, like, the gym montage. And then they're all, like, sweating and working out. And you're like, this isn't so feminist anymore.
They had to get in their 80s gym montage.
They totally did.
All movies had.
And it was totally like I'm watching Toxic Avenger or Hell Death Spa or
body
something.
Body talk.
Yeah.
Body talk. I want to hear your body talk.
Exactly.
Future sex.
So then we go through, like, you know, it goes through the whole competition. We first see them all come out and introduce themselves and all that. Then we see them, you know, each doing their little pose thing. And then we see the pose down, which is a really weird thing that was in female bodybuilding in the 80s. And you see a bit of it in Pumping Iron as well, the first one, where, like, all of them come out, all the finalists come out, and they're all, like at the front of the stage, all doing their poses and, like, bumping each other out of the way and shit, like, to try and be in front. It's really quite odd. And I don't even really know how to describe it, but if you go on YouTube, you can see, just type in pose down, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's pretty funny. So there was that playing, the 80s music throughout. Lori Bauer, the one I liked, she had this song called Dangerous, and, like, Chris, I was thinking of you because it was a total, like, cock rocky type song.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, this is actually a pretty catchy song, and I felt like I'd heard it. So, of course, I, like, did a bunch of research on it. Turns out the band who did this song is a band called Free Fast Forward, and they're a Vancouver band.
Whoa!
And the band consists of, like, Jim Vallance, Bruce Fairbairn.
What?
Yeah, it's like all of the people that made Bryan Adams famous are in this band.
Bruce Fairbairn, the
and
guy
they
who
put out one
Bruce
album.
Fairbairn, who fucking produced Aerosmith albums.
Yeah,
too?
Man. I was like, wow, this was a really random rabbit hole
to
go down.
I need to find this album.
Yeah, so look up the song. I can't remember the song. Anyway, I'll show it to you later.
All right,
but I was, because the Texan does the dance for that song.
Yeah. My fucking mind.
Super weird. Anyway, yeah, it was really good. I totally dug this movie, and it has a bit of cult movie appeal there because of the you know, connections with Rachel McLish. She's like a really kind of unlikable character in this. You know, she's nothing. I don't have anything against Christians, but she's Christian, and she's also, you know, got a real attitude, and she, you know, she hates it that other people are kind of rising up around her. So you don't really like her, kind of like Arnold in the first one.
I've never been a big fan of the original.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine for what it was, but it's, again, I don't want to buy it to own.
Right.
It was fine to watch once. But yeah, I dug this quite a bit. It was, and it was quite an engaging story. The only thing I thought maybe was wrong with it was it did feel like it was maybe a little scripted at times, which it very well could have been, but maybe not. And it, you know, and also, just like I said, it was kind of weird going from, like, kind of a real feminist message to all of a sudden a montage of the pose down, right? So it was kind of mixed messages there, but I really liked how the judges were arguing and they were trying to figure out what to do. And yeah, it was pretty engaging. So I'd say check it out if this sounds at all interesting. But yes, it's going to be a little hard to find, although you can probably find it on YouTube or something, but it's too bad it's not out a little bit more commercially. But my good old VHS came through, so.
Future sex.
Yeah. Pumping Iron 2, The Women.
Josh's VHS Adventures.
All right.
I don't know how to follow that up.
We're going to follow it up with talking about porn stars.
Hooray!
porn stars. Something I was not really aware of when some of the people I'm going to talk about were trying to break into real movies.
Like you weren't aware they were porn stars?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So like, well, because like I was a little bit naive when I was younger. So, you know, for me, the extent of porn for me was the Playboys that we had hidden in the stump in the woods.
You
for
actually
all
did
the
that?
Other boys to find in the neighborhood.
You had them in the stump?
Fuck yeah, dude.
No way.
Out in the woods, dude. Forest porn is a real thing. It's a real thing.
What's forest porn?
Have you ever heard about forest porn? Dude, when you grew up in the 80s and you didn't have the internet, you would steal a fucking Playboy or a penthouse or something from your dad, one of the dads, and you would go out into the woods where all the kids played and you'd fucking hide it. And you'd hide it in like a stump or you'd hide it somewhere. And then eventually another kid from the neighborhood would stumble across and be like, I fucking found forest porn. This is the greatest day of my life.
Are you serious?
Dude, seriously.
Wow.
Forest porn's a real thing.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was part. I know that's a real thing because I took part in this.
Geocaching takes on a whole new meaning.
Yeah. Because back then it was like you didn't have the internet. We were too young to really have access to the back secret room in the video stores.
Yeah.
And so we had Sears catalogs and forest porn. You know?
Well, you had the Cosmopolitan.
It's like, oh, fuck, here's the Sears wish book. I'm going to mark all the toys I want, and I'm going to look at chicks in bras. That's just how it's going to go.
I found the Spring Summer catalog had a much more of a better
selection.
Pretty
good, too, because it had the bikinis, too. But, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, so, I became more aware of actual adult XXX entertainment probably when I was, you know, 15, 16 or so. But this was even after some of these people we're going to talk about had tried to cross over to mainstream and I'd seen them in these movies and then to walk into like the adult section and see them on one of those boxes, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like who? No.
Well, also because some of them went the other way. Some of them started out in B movies.
Yeah.
And then when you got old enough to go into the room, then all of a sudden they were everywhere.
Yeah. And there's a couple of weird ones too of people who went transitioned from the other direction.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like a guy like Stephen Jeffries.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like that's fucking weird.
Yeah.
The guy starts off his career doing like, you know, Fraternity Vacation and obviously Evil Ed and Fright Night and 976 Evil. And then all of a sudden he's like, ah, you know what? I'm sick of this Hollywood shit. I'm going to do some gay porn.
Yeah. He's probably one of the most infamous of them all.
Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird doing that transition. And I understand the transition of trying to get away from adult entertainment in the sense that, like, you're in that industry, and in the 80s, when a lot of late 70s or 80s, when a lot of these people were trying to transition, pornographic material was looked upon as, you know, it was frowned upon, basically, like, you're a terrible person if you do this.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, a lot of people are like, porn's wrong, and why are you doing this, and you don't respect yourself, so on and so forth. You know, that was the prevalent attitude back then.
Yeah.
So that's why I think a lot of these people were trying to cross over into regular film so they could get some form of a little bit of respect. And then you have guys like Stephen Jeffries who are like going the other way, and it's really weird. What's another example of that? Like
going the other way?
Going like from regular acting to porno.
Terry Weigel?
Did she though? Oh yeah, I guess she did.
Oh yeah, she did.
Yeah, I guess she did because she started out in like what was she in? She was in cheerleader camp.
Savage Beach, the Doris movie. Yeah. And then she went and became a
full-on porn actor. I thought Ashton Gere did it too though.
Ashton Gere did do it.
Ashton Gere started out in like Evil Laugh and Dream Maniac, Creepazoids, Angel 3, and then she transitioned.
Lunch Meat is another big one of hers.
What's that?
You know, the famous VHS box, Lunch Meat?
Yeah, yeah. And
that
Lunch
was
Meat.
Ashton Gere, yeah.
And she was billed as Kim McCammy back then.
Yeah, and
but
she transitioned into porn in
1990 or so.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, that's another example of going the other way. And she was one of the biggest porn stars of the 90s, right?
Yeah.
So, it's for her, it's weird seeing her in not porn.
Well, yeah, it's like weird being like, what's she doing in Creepazoids? How come Linnea Quigley shows herself naked more than Ashton Gere does?
Yeah.
This is strange.
Well, it is strange, especially because I used to work in a video store that had a 90% porn, and so I was very familiar with Ashlyn Gear that
right,
way.
Right.
And I didn't even put that together for a while that it was the same person, that was the girl from Creepazoids.
Well, so, yeah, like
but you're just seeing her on the covers, right? I didn't watch a lot of porn when I worked there. I just you can't.
You just were like, I feel icky. When people would bring them back.
Well, it's not like you can like throw on a porn in the like.
Well, didn't you remember the stories you told me that people would bring them back like
peed on,
and
yeah, that's gross.
And there would be people who rented like 10 a day or something.
Yeah, and they'd breathe heavy and shit. And then I actually almost got into fist fights. One guy, I remember a few times I almost came to blows with him because he would wait until the new release time. And like literally wait until I like bring them out, put them out downstairs. And I was like, fuck, dude. And then he'd like come back later and he'd be like, let me see what's been returned in the last half hour. And I'm like,
what do you mean?
Fuck.
He'd wait for you to put them on the shelf?
Yeah.
So and then, no one else could get them?
Yeah. So he could get them first. Or if it wasn't new release day, he'd come in and he'd want to go through all the stuff we were going to put back before we put it back. You know, and I'm like, dude, there's like 40,000 titles there. I'm sure you can find something else. But no, he had to have...
And these
like,
were all adult
he
movies?
He had to have the newest shit. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So was this a store that was mostly catering to adult movies you're talking about?
It was
about?
A fucking awesome store. Okay, this is... We've never talked about this. This is one of the best jobs. I love my job now. Don't get me wrong. But it was a really great job at the time because it was right around... I was in college still. And I was working there full time as well and trying to put myself through school, but I was working graveyard shifts there and stuff. But it was, there was a floor of porn and then there was a floor of regular movies, like Hollywood movies. And I managed to get it because they were making so much money on the porn, like 90% of the business was the porn, but the owner of the store wanted to compete with a place called Videomatica in Vancouver here, which was like the coolest video store around. He's like, I want to compete with Videomatica. So I'm like, okay. And he's like, well, I'll tell you what, you're my ordering guy now because he knew I knew movies.
Yeah.
And he's like, buy whatever. I want to be better than them. So I got to like fucking go to the warehouse, pick out whatever I wanted, make my own sections. I could order from the States. It was amazing. So I built up like this awesome, awesome VHS like library in the store, and it was pretty fucking amazing. Unfortunately, just people in North Vancouver weren't as cool as they were in Kitsilano, and they didn't want to really rent the stuff that much, so people still just came in and rented the new releases, whereas my erotic thriller section or my trauma section didn't really rent as well. But it was still pretty fun. I loved that job a lot.
It's just so
but you had to deal with the fucking assholes, yeah, like, or the peeing guy or the best one of my college profs coming in and returning movies, and it was all tranny porn. And I'm like, I have to go to school the next day and like look at this.
You're
guy.
Looking at him out of the side of your eye.
And it's like teach your own, but it's like I know your shit now. Like, so you knew shit about a lot of people, which is kind of weird too.
But that's the thing too, is like that's maybe why I wasn't really that familiar with it either, because it did have that reputation of being like all scummy people who were into it and stuff.
It's true, but working in a porn store, you know that fucking everybody's into it. Like,
well, these days, I mean, what are the most popular sites on the internet?
No, but even then, like, because back then I used to think, oh, you know, even like me, I'm a little uncomfortable with some of those things. So it would take a lot for me to like rent a porn. And I don't, you know, if we ever did that, would be like with buddies or something, right?
Yeah.
But like, I would never just go into a store myself and do it. But after working there for a while, I'm just like, fuck, everyone does it, man. Like, there's like everyone from all walks of life.
I'm just
going
to go for it.
And that's when you went to the store and rented it. Like everyone was like people like, I didn't care. No one cares. Right.
Yeah.
But now that it's like at everyone's home, I'm sure everyone.
I just remember doing that thing where we would like every video store would have like their back corner, their cave or whatever, or they'd have like a section that was just like all wired off. They'd have these wire walls up.
Uh huh.
and then they'd have like this curtain that you had to go through. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was always at the one place we always used to go to. It was always like the wire wall would have racking on the front too, with like regular movies.
Yeah.
And the regular movies that were racked on the front were always, it was always the horror movie section.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah, totally
so I'm already in the horror movie section, right? With my buddies. I'm like, hey, why don't we just go around the corner here, go between this curtain and check it out, right?
Yeah.
And that's when we'd go in there and we'd laugh our balls off about like stuff like Friday the 13th, a nude beginning. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, kind of like the stuff we talked about when we had Robin Bougie yeah. on our episode, where I was talking about all these like how porn parodies now just aren't the same as they used to be.
No.
Because they had stuff like Beetlejism and The Penetrator and all this yeah. stuff, right? And now it's just like, saw a porn parody.
Yeah.
It's like boring, right?
Yeah.
So it's like that's also the thing where you remember we were talking about how like you couldn't compare like Ashlyn Gear, where you'd be like, it's weird seeing her on these porn boxes when you were used to her being in Creepazoids. Whereas for me, it was like I'm used to seeing someone like Ginger Lynn Allen,
yeah,
on a Vice Academy box yeah. or something, and then I'm going into the alt section just for shits and giggles with my buddies, and I see her on a box of that, and I'm like,
yeah,
that is that the same person from
yeah.
from the Vice Academy yeah. box? Because I always liked Ginger Lynn Allen.
Yeah.
Like, I always thought she was pretty likable.
Let's just call her Ginger Lynn. It's Ginger much Lynn. Better.
But you know what I mean? Like, I always liked her.
Yeah.
In these movies like Vice Academy. I knew they weren't very good movies, but I always liked her because she was in, like, Vice Academy and, like, you know, Dr. Alien and
yeah.
all these kind of movies. And then she's kind of been in other movies. She was in like Devil's Rejects briefly. She was in, there's this movie she was in the 90s called Bound and Gagged, a love story, which I really like.
Right.
Which is like a kidnapping road movie.
Yeah.
And she was really good in that too. But she was one of those ones where like I had not equated her to being an adult film actress because I hadn't, wasn't aware of that world particularly. So I had known her from all these B movies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess in some ways that's a successful transition for her with me personally.
True.
Because, you know, I was looking at her as a real actress.
Like a comedian, right?
Yeah. Like I was looking at her like that. And then to see that, you're just kind of like, that's when I'm like, how many of these people have done this? And that's yeah. when I started becoming more familiar
well,
with.
Well, you watched your first Ginger Lynn movie and was like, oh my God. This yeah. is the she's the best.
Yeah. So. But then it would be like, okay, so who else has done this?
Yeah.
Because, you know, at that time, it was when I was getting heavily into the whole background of film a lot more than when I was younger. And, you know, and it was a lot harder to track that information down, too, because we didn't have, you know, Wikipedia, Internet Movie Database.
Yeah.
We didn't have all that stuff. So we had to go library, take out books, and figure it out that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a book like, you know, Creature Features or, you know, Danny Perry cult movies and
right.
things like that, that also would be like you'd read something about someone who used to be an adult actor.
Yeah.
Moving into real movies. And then you'd be like, okay, now I got to figure this out.
Yeah.
Because for me, it was never about, oh, you know, I want to know about this because I want to see these people get fucked. Like, I wasn't like that. I was always like, I just found it really like,
oh, come on.
No.
It must have been somewhat curious.
Somewhat. But at the same time, I was always like, the transition was always kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to look at that. I'm not saying I was like a prude and like, I don't want to see that person having sex, but it wasn't my main crux for looking into these people.
How old were you? Like, come on. I get what you're saying, but I, you know.
It wasn't a fully perverted decision to look into. It was partially perverted.
Thank you.
It was, but it wasn't full on like, oh yeah, I can't wait to just see this. It was also like, I want to see it, but I also want to know the story.
Right.
Of why these people are doing this.
Yeah, which you don't really find out. It's kind of hard to find
that
out.
Yeah, you don't really. There's a lot more out there now.
Yeah.
And I find it weird, like, we're talking about Ginger Lynn, too, and she's another one who transitioned back into it.
Ginger Lynn has had a really interesting career, because yeah. she's kind of bounced back and forth, because she, yeah, like was in porn.
Yeah.
Then she went into like the Vice Academy movies and stuff while doing porn.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe she got out of it then.
I think she was out of it.
Then she got back into porn.
Yeah.
But then she did like, you know, she was in the Rob Zombie movies and she also did like this, you know, the Metallica video for Turn the Page. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
Like she does a really good job in that, but that's almost got porn in it, I think. From what I remember, or maybe it's just really, really graphic nudity, but she's kind of bounced back and forth, and I've always admired Ginger Lynn and thought she was pretty cool, and you know wondered how the hell she ever dated Charlie Sheen for as long as she did.
Yeah.
But I've always thought she was an interesting character, and I always thought she was a tough character that was really kind of in charge of what she was doing. So I think Ginger Lynn just was doing whatever the fuck she wanted.
Right.
She's like, yeah, I like doing porn right now. I'm not kind of over it, you know. I think I'll try doing some B movies for a while because it's kind of fun, and I like hanging out with Linnea, you know, and then decided, yeah, fuck this. I actually kind of like doing porn because I remember she was doing a radio show. Maybe that's how she got back into it, and I think she just kind of does what she wants,
right.
And always kind of liked her for that.
But I feel like that's an anomaly.
I do. Yeah, I think a lot of them are.
I feel like a lot of them are actually looking for the. I think in their brains they're thinking that they're going to get this newfound respect.
Yeah.
If they move into doing real, I'm using air quotes, real film.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of these people are, that's why they were doing it.
Yeah, I mean, we got to be careful, like, not to assume that.
Well, I'm not,
because,
I know,
like,
but
my first target for that is going to be Ron Jeremy.
Right.
For someone who I think would really like to legitimize himself.
Right.
As an actor. But I just don't think he has the chops.
No.
Sorry, Ron. But I mean, well, you know, and it almost becomes kind of sad in a way because it's like, I just don't think he has what he needs.
I also think that by now, I think Ron Jeremy realizes that.
By now.
Because I feel like now he is just playing on his reputation as being the hedgehog and, you know, being kind of this old scuzzy guy with a big penis who shows up in a trauma movie once in a while.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they made a movie called One-Eyed Monster where he's like his dick disattaches from his body because it's possessed by an alien force and it kills people.
Yeah, I do want to see that.
It's pretty good. It is actually pretty good. But you know what I mean? Like, I think he's now comfortable with that, like, being that kind of like,
right,
in a way, a punchline, sort of like that. Oh, let's get this skeezy old porn guy to be in our movie.
But there was probably a period where he was actually trying.
Probably was.
Yeah. And I think there was a lot like that.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of them are also just sort of capitalizing on their fame, too, and trying just like, oh, well, I can be in this mainstream movie.
Yeah.
And they're casting me because I'm a porn star, but what the fuck? Why not?
Well, that would be someone like probably like Chasey Lane.
Chasey Lane. I mean, she just, sorry, I'm like scoffing at Chasey Lane. I mean,
no,
I know,
I'm just saying she's like one who would be like, I'm going to use my name to be in a mainstream movie.
Yeah, like she was in the Sam Hain movie, like, and she was beautiful when she was younger. I totally remember that. But,
you know, she's in Demon Knight and stuff, you know. As
who
like
is
one
she
of,
in Demon Knight?
I think
Knight?
She's one of the stripper demon kind of things.
Yeah, I don't know, because I saw that too when I was looking this up. And I'm like, fucking Chasey Lane wasn't in Demon Knight.
And then she's in Orgasmo, which is about porn movies.
Yeah, like
and
there was a lot of people
He Got
in
Game and stuff.
In
but I feel she was one who was just like given these parts in these movies because her name was recognizable.
Yeah, like they're given little parts.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
There was a whole bunch of people in a 52 Pickup and Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they weren't really given big parts. But then there's other ones that are given a decent role because of like of their reputation. Like I'm thinking like Brie Olsen in Human Centipede 3.
Right.
And I think she actually was pretty good.
I haven't seen it.
For what it was.
Right.
But I was surprised by her. But I think that was kind of stunt casting. And even in Pool Party Massacre, I can't remember the actress's name, but I know there's a porn star in that.
Yeah.
Again, I think a little bit of stunt casting going on there. But you know, for the most part,
I just wanted to quickly say on Ashton Gear that I think, or not Ashton Gear, sorry, Chasey Lane. It's sad that I think her career highlight for me personally is the fact that the Bloodhound Gang wrote a song about her.
Right.
Which I find to be really catchy and offensive, where it's like, you've had a lot of dick, had a lot of dick. And he's like, you've had a lot of time, had a lot of time, but you ain't had mine, Chasey. And all this stuff is like a fan letter to Chasey Lane saying that he wants to fuck her in the ass. Oh. And I just find it really funny.
All right.
And she actually shows up on that track.
Does she?
Ooh, he's so gross and all this stuff. So maybe she did have a sense of humor about herself.
She's one I just never really got it with her. I mean, yeah. I remember looking at her on all the boxes, you know, when you'd be
in
the video store putting stuff away and thinking.
Putting stuff away, John? Uh-huh.
No, I remember thinking she's pretty attractive and stuff. But then I remember actually seeing her in action.
Right.
And going, wow, I don't know what all the hubbub's about. But another one that's stunt casting, I thought, was James Dean in The Canyons, the Paul Schrader movie.
Right.
Haven't seen the movie, but that kind of felt like this again. But then, you know, in recent times, another one that is sort of has been made a bit more of a mark is Sasha Gray, who... This is another woman that I think is fully in charge of what she's doing in her career. But I think a bit of stunt casting was going on when Steven Soderbergh cast her in The Girlfriend Experience. But since then, you know, she's done some pretty cool movies. Like she did the Nacho Vigalongo movie, Open Windows, with Elijah Wood.
Yeah, I have that home. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, and she's done I Melt With You, which I haven't seen.
I think her biggest movie is that Smash Cut, though.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I agree. I think Girlfriend Experience is probably her biggest movie.
But, you know, that's the one most people recognize her for, I think, is Smash Cut.
Yeah. And that was a shitty movie with David Hess. But I think Sasha Gray actually has the chops. And she's another one kind of like Ginger Lynn that's kind of gone in and out of the career.
Right.
In and out. But I think she's probably, like, she is a pretty good actress as well. So, I kind of like what she's doing, but again, started out as stunt casting, but I think she's sort of holding her own a little more.
I think another one who started out as stunt casting too, in a way, and also probably had to do with the situation of her adult film career, but who I actually think have come to really respect as an actress, and this is actually probably the one that I think has given the best performances of all the people we're going to talk about, is obviously Tracy Lords.
Yeah.
Like, I think she was stunt cast in Not of This Earth in 1988 by Jim Wynorski when he was remaking that Corman movie.
Oh,
because,
sure, yeah.
Because she was having, you know, she had gone through her thing about how she was doing the underage films, and she was like, oh, what am I going to do with this? And also, Corman was probably like, here's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's an opportunity to cast this adult actress who has this controversy around her, and I'm going to give her her first official movie role. And she wasn't in that movie very much, honestly, and she wasn't that good in it. And interestingly enough, because she's been in a lot of real movies since then, is that that's the only movie she's done where she's done nudity.
Oh, is it really?
Since she's transitioned into... like regular acting, and I really do think Tracy Lords is talented as an actress.
Yeah,
I really do, because she had her string in the 90s when she was doing all those action movies for like PM Entertainment, which was basically the 90s successor to Canon Films, I like to call them.
Yep.
So she was doing a movie like called Ice, where she was a diamond thief, and she was doing all these action movies, and she was held her own in those. Like, she was a tough girl, she was really cool in those. She was obviously I haven't seen Crybaby, but I've heard she's good in Crybaby in her smaller role.
She doesn't do a lot in there.
But I heard she's good in it, and she fits the role. I really, really like her in that movie Excision that I talk about a lot.
Yeah,
I thought she was really great in that as the Annalyn McCord's character's mother.
Yeah.
And she's been a highlight in a lot of really crappy movies. Like, there was this kind of not very good slasher movie called Devil May Call.
Right.
Which is set at a call center with, like, Taylor Mayne, who played Michael Myers. I think he played Michael Myers in the Rob Zombie movies.
Right.
He was the killer, And she was just like one of the co-workers of the main actress who was like this crazy cat lady kind of character. And I thought she was really good in it. I thought she fit the role and I thought she,
yeah.
you know, was funny. And that's the thing. I like Tracy Lords as an actress. I think she usually can bring a little bit extra to her roles than I expect a lot of times.
Right.
And I really do respect her the most out of everybody we're going to talk about.
Really?
I think so.
Tracy Lords?
I really do. I think she actually did rise above the controversy and has gone on to make a career for herself, and all good for her.
Yeah.
Like, really. I mean, she had that phase in the early mid-90s when she was trying to do, like, release a techno album. Yep. Like a dance album. I'm kind of questioning that area of her career, but
yeah.
I think she's actually, I don't think she's stunt casting anymore.
No, definitely not.
I think she's actually being cast for being a decent actress. Whereas yeah. when with Not of This Earth and maybe a couple of her earlier movies, it was stunt casting. So that's why I respect that, because she's managed to rise above that.
Yeah, I get. I mean, I have mixed feelings about Tracy Lords. I mean, I don't know if I can think of a lot. I mean, I agree with you on Excision, but I don't know if I can think of a lot of movies she's been in where I'm like, oh, she's doing really...
I thought she was good in those action movies for what they
were.
She
was okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, but her whole history is, you know, because she claims that, you know, she was, you know, kind of like... It wasn't a good experience for her being in porn, you know, as an underage person, which of course, you know... saying those words coming out of my mouth, of course it wasn't a very good experience. But that being said, when you listen to anyone pretty much that I've heard interviewed about Tracy Lords in that time period, she knew exactly what she was doing.
Right.
So I kind of questioned what went on there, really. Because it sounds like she knew exactly what she was doing. She knew she was underage. She knew she was kind of playing everyone. And then she used it all to her advantage. I don't know what really happened, but, you know, I do kind of, it does kind of cast a bit of a, you know, a bit of something over her personality.
Right.
And yeah, and just, I guess I just haven't seen the talent in the way you seem to.
Well,
have.
Yeah, because I'm just looking at it, a lot of times I'm looking at it from the fact that, you know, she was stunt cast.
Yeah.
And you know, I generally enjoy the movie I see her in. Like, I didn't know she was in that Devil May Call
right
until she showed up, and then I was like, oh, it's Tracy Lords, and then I was like, she was my favorite thing about the movie.
Right. Okay.
And, yeah. And that's mostly what I'm focused on. I mean, sure, her backstory may be fudged in some ways.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
no one's gonna fully come out and admit that they were doing this underage and enjoying it.
Yeah,
like, you know, no one's gonna do that. But we weren't there. We don't know the true story.
We don't know.
I'm just judging it more on what she's done since moving beyond that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So that's why, that's the thing I respect about that, is that she did build, I think her career has built up a lot more than it ever did when she was doing the adult films.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Moving on.
No, I was just going to say, I just wonder what her career would be like had she not had the history in porn.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, but that's not what we're talking about today. Particularly.
Well, it is a little bit.
It is a little bit.
In some ways, I think it is. Okay, like, let me bring someone up. Okay. Right.
Go ahead.
Because one of my favorite examples of this whole transition is Robert Kerman. And
right. I have him written down.
AKA, too. His porn name was Arbola.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, genre fans know him from the Italian cannibal movies, basically.
Yeah. Basically, he's in all of them. all of them.
Yeah,
but
he was in
Holocaust. He was in Ferox, and he was in Eaten Alive.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't, you know, I know he was in Ferox, but he didn't have like a really prominent role in Ferox, but he was one of the leads in Holocaust, and he was also Cannibal Holocaust, sorry.
Yeah.
And also Eaten Alive, he was the lead. And the thing with him is he was also in Debbie Does Dallas, and I'm just going to go on a thing with Debbie Does Dallas, because it is one of those movies that it is like kind of a porn classic.
Do you know that Debbie Does Dallas 2 was the first porno I ever saw?
Really?
Yeah.
I've never seen Debbie Does Dallas. Yeah. Have you seen the first one?
Oh, yeah.
So the first one's a classic. It's if I'm going to, like, you know, I've seen some of these movies. I haven't seen a ton. I haven't seen as many as Robin Bougie. Let me put it that way. But
I don't think many people have.
But I do know. I do know it because I, you know, I listen to the Rialto Report. I am quite fascinated by 70s porn and all that. But of Debbie Does Dallas is one that I have seen that I really liked. And Robert Kerman or Arbola is in this, and he's a pretty good actor in this. I mean, it's a kind of a dumb, you know, it's a dumb sex comedy, basically.
Well, that's what the Debbie Does Dallas movies were at first. Yeah.
But I really liked him in that. I also saw him in another one called Breaker Beauties, and he's pretty good in that as well. But then he went to Italy and worked in all these cannibal movies that have become classics since then. But I always thought he delivered a really, really solid performance. And I don't think it was stunt, like, this was not stunt casting, because back then no one gave a shit. No one cared that the fucking star of Debbie Does Dallas was starring in Cannibal Holocaust. That wasn't marketed that way.
Right.
It wasn't going to sell any more tickets. But he was actually a good actor. And that's where I'm saying I think there's a difference between him and Tracy Lords.
Right.
It's just because I think he actually was a good actor.
But I think it's also got to do with what you said, is that it's got to do with the time frame.
It's got to do with the time
frame. Because it was in the mid to late 80s that there was all that PMRC and all that backlash, which was making it, giving more of a bad reputation to that industry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, you know, it's different times too.
Yeah.
Because you're right. In the late 70s, I don't think anyone gave a shit.
No.
You're right.
Yeah.
But in the mid 80s, we were going through all our censorship, all our PMRC, all of our righteousness and all that, you know, all that stuff. And I think that's kind of the difference between the two.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Robert Kerman was good in those movies too. And, you know, I've seen Debbie Does Dallas, and you're right.
He's good. Yeah.
It's basically just a triple X sex comedy, really.
Whatever happened to Bambi Woods?
I don't know.
Whatever happened to her? She like vanished from the face of the earth. Huh. Weird.
But even the second one, because it's the first one I ever saw, I remember seeing Debbie Does Dallas 2.
Right.
And just being like, this is not much different from Revenge of the Nerds, apart from the fact that there's, you know, dicks in it. Like, really?
Cock.
I mean, there's a scene in it where they're like in a jail. The two girls are in a jail cell, and the sheriff guy, the deputy, keeps making them do stuff to him. And every time they refuse to do it, he's like, it's the law.
Is that a Revenge of the Nerds thing?
No, but I mean, that's something you'd expect to see in a sex comedy. Yeah. You know, and that's in Debbie Does Dallas too. And I'm like, thinking about that now, that's like kind of skeezy and gross, but at the time I'm like, oh, this is not much different than Porky's,
right? Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah. Another one from that time that's sort of like Robert Kerman, that I actually never even, I don't really even think of her as a porn star, but she was, is Brigitte Lahaie. And she was in she's a French actress in porn, but then she also worked a lot with like Jean Rollin, and she was in some of his classic movies like Night of the Hunted and Fascination and Grapes of Death. And you know, you see her, you know, that the image from Fascination of her with like the scythe is like an iconic Euro horror image for me. I'd never think of her as a porn star, but she was a full-on porn star and was in tons of movies. But I thought she was pretty good actress, and quite atmospheric, and had quite an interesting look to her. It was gorgeous, of course, but like Robert Kerman, I thought she was very easily, it was very easy for her to move back and forth, probably because she was European though, you know, cause she was in Europe, in European adult movies, and then working with guys like Jean Rollin on his horror movies. But you know, she was easy for her to move back and forth. But like, her and Kerman are probably my favorite examples of this whole topic, because I just think they did it seamlessly.
Yeah, well, kind of jumping off that, how you're like, because she was European.
Mm-hmm. She's still working. She was in like Calvera not that long ago. Yeah,
but you know what I mean? Like, because she can transition back and forth, that brings me to someone who is also, this is, you know, a Japanese actress who I really think is fun and mainstream movies, but also has a career where she's jumping back and forth between adult movies and regular movies, and that's an actress called Asami, who was in Gunwoman, which you saw. Okay. She was the lead in Gunwoman.
I didn't know she was a porn actress. Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And she's also in this really goofy 2012 movie I really love called Dead Sushi.
Right.
And she's the by far the best thing in that movie.
Right.
Because she plays like the innkeeper's wife. And she's just so funny in it and so engaging and just so hilarious. And when I watched that movie, I didn't know at the time that she was also in porn movies.
Yeah, I had no idea.
And now I'm just like, wow, like she's really good in this. And, you know, and even when I'm looking at her filmography right now on my phone, I mean, she's got like, she's doing all these crazy Asian movies. She's got like Tokyo Living Dead Doll and things like that. But then she's in Karate Kill. She's in Karate Kill, which I really want to see. Yeah. But then she's also in these movies like Rape Zombie, Lust of the Dead, and all these kind of things.
Rape
and,
Zombie?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
There's like five of them. But she's
there's five Rape Zombie movies?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Really?
And, but she's like one who's been like kind of bouncing back and forth between... Yes, again. But you know what I mean? Like, she's one that where maybe because she is Japanese and it's not North America, that's not looked upon as being a bad thing particularly.
Right.
You know, like, I think it's a lot more free and open in the way that these actors and actresses can transition between the two. I don't think it's looked upon as a big deal.
I don't know that much about, yeah.
But I mean, compared to North America, probably.
Yeah, yeah, definitely in Europe, for sure.
Because we're a lot more tight, like, you know, it's okay to show someone's head being blown off, but the minute someone has sex in a movie, you can't let our kids see that.
That's true.
You know, that's North America.
Which I kind of understand, too.
But... In a way, but
you
know what I mean? But she's another one that I had just thought of that I was like, yeah, she's done a pretty good job jumping between the two.
Yeah, I had no idea that she had even... Oh, but so you've seen her in Dead Sushi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, she was really good in Dead Sushi. I haven't had a chance to check out Gunwoman, though, but I remember you saying it was pretty grody.
It was, well, certainly explains why she obviously had no problem taking her clothes off.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton more here.
I have a couple more I just wanted to briefly talk about.
I got one big one, yeah.
Well, the one I wrote down is... Is this one, I just, when I was looking into her, I was like, yes, stop being a sicko.
What movie?
No, but when I was like looking into kind of researching, I didn't realize that she had done all this stuff, and that's Veronica Hart.
Okay.
Because, you know, this is someone who P.T. Anderson called the Meryl Streep of porn. Basically, right?
What mainstream movies was Veronica Hart in?
She was in all the Chuck Vincent ones. Now, Chuck Vincent was a guy who was a director who transitioned from porn into making low-budget, like, T&A movies, sex comedies and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he started in, like, the 70s with, like, wet, hot T-shirts and things like that.
Oh, that one...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that one we watched?
Yeah, we watched Hot T-Shirts.
My skin is so wet.
My skin is so wet. Yeah, that one. But she was in a lot of his stuff. So she was in like Cleo Leo, Young Nurses in Love, all those kinds of ones that I would rent, like Preppies and Wimps and all those Chuck Vincent movies.
Oh, those ones. Okay. Oh, really? She was in all those?
She was in a lot of those, yeah.
Oh, weird.
But she was also... She only acted in adult movies from 1980 to 1982.
Yeah.
And then she was in all these Chuck Vincent movies and that. She was also in Bloodsucking Pharaohs in Pittsburgh.
Really?
As like one of the main villains and stuff.
Wow.
And then since the 90s to today, she directs and produces and has non-sexual roles in adult films.
Right.
And she's won awards for directing and producing these adult films.
Huh.
So that's like, I'm like, wow, that's like an interesting story too.
Yeah.
Because like, I remember seeing all those Chuck Vincent movies too in the 80s when I was going through my sex comedy phase.
Yeah.
Not realizing that because Chuck Vincent was a pornography director, most of the actresses in his movies were adult film stars.
Right.
Because, you know, Chuck Vincent's most famous movie is obviously Hollywood Hot Tubs.
Right.
So, I mean, I personally prefer Wimps, but that's just me. But... You know, she was one of the ones who was in all of them. And I also didn't realize she had this storied past and that she still has this acclaim for in that industry, and that's pretty cool.
Oh my God, I had no idea.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's totally cool.
Yeah.
I always liked Veronica Hart. All right. I guess, yeah, another big one for me is, and she wasn't in a lot of mainstream movies, but she wasn't in a lot of movies in general, and that's Marilyn Chambers.
Right.
But she's another one I thought was pretty decent actress as well.
Well, Rabbit alone, man.
In Rabbit, and have you ever seen Angel of Hate?
Yeah, Angel of H-E-A-T.
That is an awesome movie.
Get it right. It's Angel of H-E-A-T. Yeah,
got one of the best title sequences in a B-movie.
That's a pretty good movie. It's hard to come by.
It's hard to come by, haha. But
fuck.
It's got a bunch of, it's basically she plays like kind of like a secret agent, like trying to fight these like robots, and it's pretty fun. It's a pretty fun movie. And then she was also in all those like bedroom fantasies and stuff.
Yeah.
But I always liked...
She was also in Party Incorporated, which is a Chuck Vincent...
Party Incorporated.
Which is a Chuck Vincent film.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
But Marilyn Chambers was good in her adult stuff, too. I mean, she was good in Behind the Green Door and Insatiable. So, I mean, but again, you could totally see that she had acting talent.
Right.
Yeah.
One I wrote down, which... I wrote it down because it's probably the most tragic story. And you know, you probably know who I'm talking about. Is
Savannah. Yeah.
Yeah. So she wasn't in a lot of mainstream movies, really. She was in like The Invisible Maniac and Sorority House Massacre 2 and things like stuff we would rent on a weekend.
Yeah.
Just to kind of see like hot girls.
Yeah.
In skimpy clothes.
That was Adam Rifkin's first movie.
Invisible Maniac.
Yeah.
But the thing about her was. Anytime I saw her in like an interview or anything like that, she always seemed to have like a pretty good personality and everything.
Really?
Like she always did to me.
Huh.
Why, you would disagree with that?
I just thought she always seemed really sad and bored. But
well, it could be, but she had a sad fucking life though, dude.
Yeah.
Like really. I mean, this is a chick who she like basically dated every rock star on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
You know, she dated Billy Idol. She dated Vince Neil. She dated Mark Wahlberg. She dated freaking Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
And then she ended up like committing suicide. And the story of that is brutal. Like brutal. And I think she could have maybe done something in real movies. Like
the car accident? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, she had a car accident.
Yeah.
And then because she broke her nose and was messed up in the car accident, she came home.
Yeah.
Sent a friend out to walk her dog and shot herself in the face. Like, that's fucking brutal. That's
because she didn't think she'd be beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah. That's like a terrible story.
Yeah.
Like a terrible story. And I don't know if that's got to do with just the... Because she had been dating so many rock stars and she had been in that... In adult films, maybe... Beauty was the most important thing to her, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think she could have maybe made that transition into real movies because I didn't think she was bad in these movies that I saw.
Hmm.
She was only 23 when she died.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'd never know. So I just wrote her down because she was one of those ones where I'm like, maybe that's a lost opportunity. Because if she was dating all these rock stars, why wasn't she like transitioning into their videos?
That's true.
And then trying to transition from those videos into having a steady career in B-movies. I mean, she'd obviously had no qualms being in B-movies. She's in fucking Invisible Maniac and Sorority House Massacre 2, right?
Yeah.
Like, she could have found a niche in that. And you know, it's unfortunate. And, you know, that's one of the stories where I read it and I'm just like, you know, sometimes I guess fame is not at all what it's cut out to be. And, wow.
No, it's a sad story what happened to Savannah. It always sounds like she was pretty fucked up though. Like I think there was a lot of drugs involved and
there could have been, and she probably had like personal like confidence issues too.
Yeah, and she didn't seem like she really liked what she was doing ever. Like anyway.
I just wanted to bring it up because that's one where I think maybe there could have been something there if given the chance.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be a bummer, but I just thought it was important to talk about.
About Savannah?
Yeah.
I don't have a lot more. I mean, just on a brief note, Jamie Gillis, again, one of the great 70s porn actors. He was in a few other things. He was in, like, Joel M. Reed's follow-up to Bloodsucking Freaks called Night of the Zombies.
Yeah.
He was in a kind of a shitty direct-to-video movie called Die, You Zombie Bastards. I think that was his last movie, unfortunately. And but he was also in a movie called director Joe Sarno called Abigail Leslie Is Back in Town. I thought this was an interesting one because this had Jamie Gillis and Eric Edwards, another one of the greats from the classic porn era. And I thought they were both pretty good in this as actors. But I think Jamie Gillis just really liked doing porn. So that's why he never really tried that hard to get out of it. But it's kind of neat seeing him in a few other things. And, of course, I think you've written this one down, too, is the movie Evil Tunes.
Yeah.
With, was that Fred Ray?
Fred Ray, yeah.
Yeah, Fred Olin Ray directed. But that had Barbara Darren in it and also Madison, who was, she was in New Wave Hookers, too, right? You were bringing that up earlier?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't be talking about New Wave Hookers 2. Well, I was a secret.
You were talking about New Wave Hookers 2. I was like, what's the connection? It's because of Madison.
I think so, yeah.
But again, she like, you know, and I know you like Savannah, but I kind of looked at all these three as kind of similar in that they just happened to be in a couple of non-porn movies.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not going to say Madison was like, oh, wow, she was great. She should have gone on to more. I mean, she was cute and everything, but... Evil Tunes is still kind of a fun movie because it mixed like, you know, a kind of a sleazy B movie sex comedy with animation, which I thought was kind of a neat idea.
I always thought Monique Gabriel was the reason to watch Evil Tunes, yeah. To be honest. But
yeah,
it's just interesting because like, you're right. You can't get a lot of information about why these transitions were attempted, but I'd really like to know. I'd like to know the mindset behind that because, like, there's good money in the adult industry. But I think for some of these people, it's like, well, that's fine, but maybe they were looking for more. Like, maybe they were seeing mainstream actors be like, I think I can do that. And then it not quite work out for them. And I just think there's, like, a really interesting story to be had from all of that.
Well, it's an exit strategy too, yeah. Right? I mean, not everyone is Ginger Lynn that can keep doing this
right
when they get older and pull it off. Like a lot of these people, you know, when they're hitting like their late 20s, it's time to move on for right. A lot of them because they're just, you know, MILF porn wasn't a big thing in the 80s, you know?
Right.
Or maybe it was. I don't know. But I mean, it just seems like...
Well, how much of it rented? No.
That would probably be a lot. That would probably be my thing. If I was a porn actor and I was in my 20s and I had some acting ability, I would probably be trying to find a way to like further my career somehow.
Right.
But you are always going to have that mark against you, right? I mean, it's going to be a very, very difficult thing to do.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like let's go back to Tracy Lords for a minute.
Yeah.
She's been out of the game for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And she's still referred to as that porn actress.
Yeah.
And it's been, 30 years.
Yeah.
And she's still referred to as that. So, yeah, that stigma is going to be with you.
Oh, it is, totally.
Forever.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe, I don't know, it's hard to explain. Having not been in that industry and everything, it's hard to get the mindset. But there might be something there that I'd love to read a dissertation of something like that, I think.
I think it would be a tough industry. I mean, it would be a tough world to live in. Like, it's almost sometimes why I think like some supermodels try to get into acting,
right?
Like, why did Cindy Crawford try and get into acting, and who else? Elle McPherson.
Angie Everhart.
Yeah, like those guys were all like big supermodels, but there's a fucking expiry date on that stuff,
right?
You know, and it's just the way our society is.
Yeah,
so you got to find something to do, and you know, if you think you've maybe got that could be part of it, then sure. You know, some people want to go be moms. Some of them want to go open clothing stores. Others might want to be lawyers. Some of them might want to be actors, right? I mean, and they've tried.
Yeah.
But, you know, unless you're really good at it, you're probably not going to stick around, right? And that's, I think, what happened with a lot of them and what happens with a lot of porn stars.
Right.
I just think a lot of the 70s ones could have probably had better careers, and I just don't know what happened there. And that's what interested me. Why did Robert Kerman only make the three movies? You know, right. why you know, Bridget LaHaye is a little bit of a anomaly because she's European and has been pretty steady through everything. But you know, why did Jamie Gillis only make the few movies? I mean, like I said, he probably liked doing porn. But yeah, it's interesting how a lot of them sort of dabbled a bit and then sort of either went back or just said fuck it.
Right.
You know, interesting stuff. But like to, I do enjoy reading biographies about these guys. And like I said, if you're interested in this kind of topic at all, the Rialto Report is a highly, highly, highly recommended podcast. Yeah. Because they do really long interviews with a lot of these people, and you hear their whole life stories. So, you know, and a lot of them are really interesting, like what's happened, what they've been through, where are they now? It's fascinating shit. Yeah, I mean, tragic a lot of the times.
And there's also those After Porn Ends docs on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the first one of those.
I've only seen the first one, too, and it was all right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's another source if you want to kind of look into that kind of stuff, too. You could watch that.
Yeah.
And what's some of the books? There's a couple books out there that are worth reading. Have you read that Lex McNeil one?
I haven't. I own it, though. But
okay. What's that one called?
The Other Side of Hollywood,
I think. That one I've heard is supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are sources out there if you want to, like, kind of look into the alternative side of filmmaking, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, like, we talked about that on Bougie's episode as well. I mean, that's if you're interested in the industry.
Right.
But if you're kind of more interested in, like, the what happened to or what their lives are like, check out the Rialto Report.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, that's it for that. And thanks for listening. I know it was a bit of an offbeat topic, but it's fun to do those once in a while.
I think it turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you let us know if you thought it turned out pretty good?
Yeah.
You guys know the drill. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Search for GBW Podcast. Obviously, I'm going to ask you to go to iTunes and rate and review. But more important than that, I'm going to ask you to spread the word.
Spread.
If you like the podcast, tell a friend. Have a friend tell a friend. Roll it up.
And so on. And so on.
And so on. And so on. And so on.